Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's For Women. You are not 9 to 5 and neither are we. Conveniently open online 365 days per year, 24 hours per day.
You're very welcome back. It has been described as normal people with murder. Andrew Hughes' fascinating new crime novel, Emma Disappeared, is in the shops this morning, Andrew. Is it? Is it out now?
It's been out since last Thursday.
Oh, brilliant. So congratulations on that. You're in studio. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you very much.
Well done this novel, because I don't read a huge amount of crime fiction, and I was kind of going, I'm going to be into this now. This is very good. My God, I hadn't a clue the things that would happen and unfold. Let's get into it. What is the background? Because it's unusually, it's set in 2018, isn't it?
It's 2018, 2019. That was one of the kind of, you know, COVID hit in its case of, do I deal with COVID or either set it before or just after it? So
good decision.
It's a very much contemporary but kind of ambiguous about what exact year it was. But yes, Emma Hart is a young graduate. She's a young entrepreneur. She has gone missing. All of Dublin is talking about it. The protagonist of the book is a man called James Lister. He's an archivist in the National Library. He likes to present himself, especially online, as very much a progressive, you know, ally of the oppressed and women in particular. But he has been showing very much undue interest in this particular case of Emma Hart.
Yes.
And perhaps as the story goes on, we shall find out that he knows more, perhaps, than he should.
What does he know? And he seems like a sort of a normal enough guy, doesn't he? Where did he come up with this? He's an archivist, so is that your background?
He's an archivist. Yeah, I happen to be an archivist as well. James Lister lives in Botanic Avenue, which is where I used to live. His local is Fagan's in Drumcondra. His favourite drink is Hophouse, just like me. But there the similarities end.
Okay.
Once you get into the darker recesses of the mind, it's all made up. Yeah, I suppose it's a bit of write about what you know. So that the character kind of popped into my head fully formed. Also, like archives, I'm an archivist and it has taken me to interesting places. I started here in RTE in the television archives.
Did you? But you're okay now.
I'm okay. I used to watch The Late Late Show on prime time as a job. It would be my job to catalogue them. So
right.
Very, you know,
wow.
An enjoyable job. Enjoyable job. It has taken me to interesting places like Tullin Alley Castle and Killigar House. And so it just struck me that archives, as an archivist, could be an interesting background for the character. Then have him working in the National Library in Dublin, just so we can soak up that Dublin atmosphere. It's close to Trinity College. He strikes up a relationship with another Trinity College graduate. So we kind of bring in the idealistic world of Trinity students and their particular interest in this missing person's case. Mm-hmm. It was a case of writing about what you know. And it was nice just to set it in the Dublin that I know.
And thank God you didn't give it all fake names and pretend it's a kind of a phony Irish city, because
no.
That drives me mad.
Yeah, and I tried to do that as much as possible. Like Fagan's and is real. He has his first date in Neary's, just off Grafton Street. Obviously, Trinity and the National Library are real. The Botanic Gardens plays a big role. He lives in Drumcondra. So, and it was nice to kind of set stuff around that north side location as well.
It's lovely, yeah. Drumcondra, obviously, very special to you.
Yeah, my mam grew up there just around the corner from the Cat and Cage. And so ever since all of us have come to Dublin for college or whatever it is, we've always kind of been very much Drumcondra focused.
Yeah.
So it was nice to kind of set the book there. And the Botanics was a great location. I lived just beside it, and which was fantastic during lockdown to have the Botanics just a kilometre away once it opened up again. And I remember saying, why not have this as a possible setting for I won't say what might happen, but it's a possible setting for the shenanigans that happen.
Yes, because you're from Wexford, is that right?
That's right, Enniscorthy.
And I'm from Monaghan. Drumcondra's kind of my hinterland for a long time as well in Dublin,
right, yeah.
Where the Colchis, it's sort of like safe territory, isn't it?
It is.
Entry
it's
point
kind of,
to Dublin.
There's St. Pat's there where the, you know, a lot of teachers come up, and that might be part of it. And
feels like a kind of a Colchi town.
Yeah.
Drumcondra.
It's very, very well.
In fact, you probably had the same experience to me. We go into Fagan's, which is a beautiful pub, and hoping that Bertie wasn't there. Because we used to be always going, oh yeah, I can't believe the Prime Minister is really here.
Yeah, it's
oh, yeah,
it kind of added a bit of excitement. I remember then myself and my dad went for a pint in the Goose, which is not too far away. And
yeah, he was there as well.
Bertie came in as well.
You couldn't get away. I'm not saying it was bad. It was just that you always had to kind of speak to him, and he'd speak to you about football.
And and if there were kind of tourists there, you would kind of feel you have to kind of nudge them there. There's our Prime Minister. He just happened to come in.
So it's such a good idea to have this whole Drumcondra lifestyle in through this novel, and this is where James Lister is hanging out. Yeah. But the real crack are the students who, and you're kind of having fun with that whole podcast online, online sleuths basically who think they know more than the Gardaí.
Absolutely. It's part, yeah, it's part of this this persona that Lister presents to himself. He very much, it's kind of what he does in general. He always calibrates what to say and how to think. So he has this internal inner monologue that we get to see throughout the book, which might be very different from how he presents himself to the world. And like online, he has the perfect opportunity to always say the right things, always to support the right causes. And because of that, he gets drawn into this group of very much idealistic and kind of activist students. And so Lister kind of looks at them with a bit of a jaundiced eye. But he's also interested in a relationship with one of them, Libby Miller. And so we, as the book goes on, we might fear for Libby Miller and what Lister's intentions towards her are. There's already a missing person going on. Could Libby
that's probably the normal people bit, so they're talking about that relationship because it's absolutely slightly tortured, isn't it?
That's it. It's as if what if in normal people one of the group happened to be perhaps a psychotic in some fashion, up to no good, perhaps involved in a murder to some degree. How would that dynamic play out?
There's less communism than the Sally Rooney stuff. To be fair,
It's a bit more surface level. That's the type. I mean, Libby and her friend Miranda are very much down to earth and pure in their intentions. Their friend Pascal, is slightly not quite as sincere. He is, again, he's a bit like Lister in that you feel that he's. This progressivism of his is a front. Lister kind of sees through that. Pascal is the type of guy who says, what feminism needs is my guiding and steady hand. Where Lister sees through that.
And he also, he likes breaking privacy for online purposes as well, doesn't he, for his campaign? There's Pascal character, yeah.
Yes, he has no problem in tweeting whatever he knows about just for online clout.
So what is your novel saying to us about social media?
Well, I think, ultimately it is to be conscious of the dangers of what we reveal about ourselves. So much is available online and we put out so much, and perhaps we aren't aware or fail to be conscious sometimes of what people can find out about us. And for somebody like Lister, who, I mean, the very first scene, he sits down beside Libby on the bus. It's just a chance. He's going into work. Libby Miller happens to sit beside him. She opens up her laptop and her name is displayed on the login screen.
Yeah.
And Lister's the type who would just, he dips his hand into his pocket and pulls out his phone and Googles her name and sees what comes up.
A height of creepiness.
It is. And so he is interacting with this stranger who sits beside him, liking her tweets and so on. And she's kind of confused about who this man is who's liking her tweets. She's never come across him before. Little does she know that he's actually sitting beside her. And through that, so that happens and he gets off the bus and goes to work. Libby then, follows him on Twitter, kind of interacts with him back, saying thanks for liking my tweets or whatever she said. And he strikes up a relationship in that fashion. Now, there's nothing terribly wrong. Like, it's definitely creepy. And
but he's faking kind of things he's interested in order to.
Yeah. He does that. He
using her online. I mean, it kind of shows well the recklessness of not being safe online, isn't it? Not recklessness, I suppose. It's people, and you're always amazed. I'm amazed on public transport and flights and so on, how indiscreet people are there.
Yeah,
they've got like spreadsheets open and stuff for their company. Yeah. And I'm very nosy, so I'm looking and going, oh wow, okay.
I've heard sales of the writers as well writing their novels on planes and so on. I'm kind of vaguely conscious of people reading the book as it's going along.
Have you seen that? Have you seen people writing?
I've heard other authors talking about it. And the thing is as well, they're worried because it's the first draft and people say, oh, there's that famous author and she's writing a book. Let me see how it is. And she said, no, this is not going to be good. You don't want to wait till it's edited. I
can't believe someone would do such a thing. The big change here, and social media is important because this is a big change for you, isn't it, in terms of the stuff you've been writing up to now?
Absolutely. Yeah, I started, I came from a history background. My first book was a social history of Fitzwilliam Square and then moved into historical fiction. It just seemed like the natural course for me. I'd come across this great story about a guy called John Delahunt and wrote, he was a murderer and Dunmancastle informer. So wrote that book first. Then to move away from the villain, I said I'd like my next book to have a hero and be a young woman rather than a man. So I came up with the character of Abigail Lawless, who was the coroner's daughter. And that was the One Dublin One Book last year.
It was hugely read as a result. One Dublin One Book is a big thing, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it's fantastic. I mean, it was such a boost for me for that to happen, because the book had come out in 2017.
Yeah.
It was 5 years later that you get the call from the Dublin UNESCO City of Literature office, and just the whole month and the organisation behind it and the engagement that you have with library users and various people who come to events around the city. It just, it upped my profile hugely and gave me a huge boost. And it's going on at the moment. Louise Nealon's Snowflake is the current one. So yeah, like just going around and seeing the book up on banners, and as you're driving down the motorway, it's up on advertisements.
That's a nice feeling.
Yeah. So that was great. But I had moved away then while I was writing after The Coroner's Daughter. I'd moved into this modern contemporary crime. So One Dublin, in a way, was nice to kind of put, not a full stop, but perhaps a semicolon to my historical fiction writing, moving now into contemporary fiction. But I found the move to be kind of liberating. There's a lot of research, constant research, when you're writing historical fiction, moving into the modern world. There's less of that. There still is a case of, you know, how do you send a direct message on Twitter? What, you know, are you, can the police track you with your mobile phone? All these kind of little things
that
you have to
check.
And generally how to use social media and mobile phones in a story like that. But if, again, it's a case of exploiting that for plot purposes more than worrying about it. So
do you kind of have to constantly worry about it, because everything can be rumbled now in modern era?
Yeah, I mean, but I suppose you just have to put your mind into the mind of somebody who is conscious of being tracked, and how would you go about, you know, not having the police track you down with your mobile phone, where to leave it, what to do. But it was also like how Lister sparks up a relationship with Libby over social media, how they just, people tweet and text each other overnight, how that might be reconstrued and reconstructed in some kind of investigation afterwards. It was fun to think about those things.
There's a lot of fun in the, I don't know if it was, I think it is intentional. There's a lot of comedy in them.
There's a bit of dark humour. I mean, I suppose
very cynical, Andrew.
Yeah, I know. I suppose it's one
male
of the things.
Male feminists don't come out very well.
It's, yeah, the men in general don't come out. All sorts of toxic masculinity in various forms are explored through this book.
And I just mentioned at the start, there are scenes in radio panels, programs.
Yeah, there's
as well. I wondered who was involved in that.
So Pascal and Lister are invited into a radio show because of something that happened. Pascal slightly goes to pieces during the radio interview. Lister is very calm and collected. It's kind of little ways to show Lister in a good light. One is kind of his humour. Like, he is charming in various ways. It's just a case that we're constantly aware that he's always calculating what he says and his charm and so forth. He has fairly good relationship with his niece Lolo. It's kind of the only relationship in the book where he seems to actually be genuine, and these are honest feelings. So yes, it's a way, the humour of it is a way to kind of make us like him, because there's dark aspects of his character, but we also have to kind of root for him. When it's kind of, I read The Talented Mr. Ripley recently, and he's an awful character.
Yeah.
And I didn't know he was going to be on the Netflix. I didn't know there was a Netflix series coming up.
So, and I think it's more true to the book than the film was 25 years
ago.
Yeah,
I remember the film. I saw the film, but I remember very little.
He's kind of a fool in the film, isn't he? Whereas he's very calculated in the novel.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. And it's a case of how did, like, Patricia Highsmith get us to the point where we were rooting for Ripley in these moments where we think he's going to be nabbed.
Yeah.
And you say, he's terrible.
That's a really good point.
He should be arrested and put in prison.
But for some reason we're going, no, he must do this thing to get off.
Do this and wriggle out with it. And when he does wriggle out, you go, oh, fair play. So it's a bit like that with Lister. As the net is closing in, you kind of want to have some feeling towards him, in that, you know, maybe he's not all bad. Maybe he's a victim of circumstance. Is he guilty of anything? If so, what is he guilty of?
His barrister brother has the family home, which is a nice house on Griffith Avenue.
Yeah.
And one of my favourite, I think one of the funniest sequences is the dinner part. There's a dinner.
Oh yeah, the dinner from hell.
With the mammy and everyone. I mean, that's a vignette on its own.
Yeah, the mammy and his mother and his Aunt Peggy. And yeah, it's a family occasion. And it's the one where he introduces Libby to the family for the first time. And his brother Colin's life is on the verge of falling apart. And yeah, so like Lister has a lot of things on his plate. There's
he's a very interesting character.
The main thing is that he doesn't want to be caught or rumbled for anything that might have happened with this disappearance of Emma Hart.
Someone's on to us already. They say, I had a friend called Libby who lived on Botanic Avenue. What a coincidence. It's a Hazel in Catalyse. The lawyers at Shed are like, what? It's a total coincidence.
Yeah, I can't quite remember.
Andrew came to speak to our Ballymun writers group in the fabulous Ballymun library last year. He was so helpful and informative to us new writers. And that's from Teresa in Santry.
Yeah, I remember that. That was a lovely day.
That's nice. That's speaking to other writers. Is that a nerve-wracking thing when you're kind of going, you're writing yourself, probably still see yourself as a new writer in many ways.
Yeah.
And you're talking to people who are going, tell us, how do we do this?
Well, yeah, I've gone to a writer's workshop for the last 10 or 12 years. I started writing through a writer's workshop in the Irish Writers' Centre, which really gave me my start. So I'm kind of very used to that format of other writers showing their work and commenting on it and being open with people. And so it is. It's again from One Dublin. I got that opportunity to meet with other writers' groups, and it's nice to share that experience.
It's good to. We must before we go let you go. We have to mention you did some genealogical research recently and discovered very important links.
That's
tell
right.
us about that.
That's right. This was before COVID as well. BC family started looking into family history and genealogy. Most of us, especially the Hugheses, are from around kind of north of the Four Courts area, Greek Street and Beresford Street and Church Street. But my dad's grandmother came from Inishkeen. Her name was Bridget Fitzsimons. Her mother was Mary Lennon. So my great-great-grandmother is a Lennon from Inishkeen. And there is a line in a Patrick Kavanagh poem, I think it's called Christmas Childhood.
Christmas Childhood, for sure, yep.
Which mentions his father playing the melodeon, and the melodeon calls to Lennons and Callans over the bog.
Across the wild bog. So we're there, we are together.
So our families were neighbours hundreds of years. We might be first cousins several times removed.
There's loads of Fitzsimons in the Skeens, I'm sure you'll find.
Oh yeah, we were up there. We made a pilgrimage up there to find the old homestead, and we met some current Fitzsimons and had a few drinks with them and went to see the Patrick Kavanagh's home, Patrick Kavanagh's grave.
So, proper writer's weekend.
Yeah, proper pilgrimage back
I thought it was very important to include that. But the most important thing today is Emma Disappeared is out and it is very good. Hot recommendation from this show anyway. Andrew Hughes, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Oliver.
And the best of luck with everything in the future. 51551 is the text.